celiac disease, an inherited autoimmune digestive disease, sometimes known as SPRU, has been on the rise. Since 1974 in the United States, the rate of celiac disease has doubled every 15 years. Back then, 1 in 501 people had blood markers for the disease, but by 2003, the number of people with celiac disease had increased to 1 in 133. And today, celiac disease affects at least 3 million Americans and is also rising in incidence worldwide. Joining us this morning to help us understand this debilitating disease and what you need to know about it is Diana Stuber, registered dietitian and certified diabetes educator at the Joslin Center here at Upstate Medical. Welcome, Diana.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
First, let's start out by explaining what exactly is celiac disease.
Celiac disease is an autoimmune disease, and the trigger is known, and the trigger is gluten. And so when a person eats gluten, the body responds by targeting the small intestine with an attack, basically. The immune system attacks the small intestine. And the issue here is that it attacks the villi in the small intestine, and that's what is really important for absorption of nutrients.
So the villi are these little projections that wall of the small intestine, like fingers.
They're kind of like fingers, right. And they basically increase the area where we can absorb nutrients. So if you think of your fingers and then you close your fist, you can see that it's a straighter line across the top of your fist if it's closed than it is if your fingers are up there. If you have to run your finger across, up and down all those fingers.
So there's less surface area to be able to absorb the important nutrients that come through the small intestine.
Right, if somebody has untreated celiac disease.
Now, where is gluten found, though? I mean, gluten is something that you're hearing more and more about. So what are the substances in which we find gluten?
Gluten is technically a protein in certain grains, in wheat, barley, and rye. Mm-hmm. And the chemical names of those proteins are different depending on the grain, but we kind of generically call it gluten. And what happens is it passes through the barrier in the small intestine, and then it starts this whole chain of events where the immune system then can target the cells in the small intestine and cause damage.
So when it causes damage, it basically affects absorption in the small intestine, and therefore you can have issues of malnutrition. Well, we'll get to that, but basically it's actually creating a self-imposed damage to one's own body.
Right.
Okay. So I understand that the symptoms do vary based on from person to person, but also that they vary based on whether you find it in children or adults. I read somewhere that young children and infants have different kinds of symptoms. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, what used to be considered the standard symptoms would be digestive complaints. It could be a stomach ache, it could be bloating, diarrhea, typical things like that. And those are more often found in children.
And weight loss
and weight
secondary
loss,
to that.
Yeah, failure to thrive in children is a big one. There have been photos of untreated children, mid to early 1900s, I should say, mm-hmm. where they looked starved. Children with very thin legs and bloated bellies, typical protein and calorie malnutrition. In adults, there may be no symptoms at all. And sometimes it's only found, celiac disease is only found when people have unexplained anemia that's not responding to supplementation, or they may be diagnosed with osteoporosis at a much earlier age than one would expect. And those are symptoms that are related also to the malabsorption, but there may not be any diarrhea, there may not be any GI discomfort.
Actually, I read somewhere that you can even have things as far-fetched or as far afield as numbness in the fingers and hands, and depression or anxiety sometimes can mask the fact that they have a celiac problem.
It affects all of the body systems. We used to think it was kind of only one-dimensional, affecting the digestive tract, and now they're finding that it can affect every body system. Some people have problems in the liver. Some people can develop cardiomyopathy, a heart problem. It can affect fertility.
Or even missed menstrual periods, things like
yes,
that.
Yes, yep.
So it's it seems, therefore, with all this variety of symptoms that can occur, and in some cases you said no symptoms, how does one diagnose? It must be very difficult to diagnose this.
Well, if somebody does have symptoms, what's been unfortunate is that we didn't have as easy of a testing or screening mechanism until about 2000. And since then, a person can be screened with a blood test, and it's really very simple. It's not really expensive, and if that's positive, then a biopsy is done, and that confirms the diagnosis. We are, now that we know more about celiac disease and in what other conditions it might occur, and the fact that there is a strong hereditary link, a predisposition. If somebody else in your family has this, they're doing some more active case finding, if you will, and doing the screening, and they're finding a lot of people who don't have symptoms. However, unfortunately, there are people who may have had digestive complaints that they haven't gotten relief for as long as 11 years before celiac disease has finally been diagnosed.
So that really has created a lot of confusion and problems, I would think,
yeah,
for those people.
You know, one of the challenges here is that the symptoms are really not specific to any one condition. It could be irritable bowel disease.
Hence the difficulty in diagnosis.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah. And creating a lot of confusion. But if you have no symptoms at all, then is it affecting you adversely?
Yeah, potentially. I know a woman who...
Well, you know, I'm going to ask you to hold that thought because we're running out of time before the break. Hold that thought. We're going to take a very short break. And when we come back, we're going to go right back to that story because I want to understand much more about celiac disease. And I'm sure our listeners do too. I'm Linda Cohen, and this is HealthLink on Air, 570 WSYR. Back to HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen, along with Diana Stuber, registered dietitian and certified diabetes educator at the Joslin Diabetes Center. Right before the break, you started to tell a story regarding someone who, I guess, had no symptoms but was having a problem. And how did that manifest itself?
Well, this is a woman I know who has diabetes, and people with type 1 diabetes are at increased risk for celiac disease. But she was having trouble with anemia. She had a lot of trouble with depression. She had thyroid disease and was taking a thyroid hormone, and the hormone level could never seem to be regulated. She'd have a blood test, and her blood levels would be high, and then they'd be low, and all over the place. And oftentimes, a physician's first thought is that the patient might not be taking the medication as directed.
So they're non-compliant in some way.
Exactly. When in fact she actually was taking it as directed. The kind of trip point here was that she stepped off a curb at the age of 40 and broke her ankle. Mm-hmm. A non-traumatic fracture. And she had a bone density done, and she was in fact osteoporotic. Now, having had this break resulted in a number of surgeries over the course of 6 years, caused her to lose her job. Then she comes in to talk to me as a dietitian, and she mentions that her grandson was just diagnosed with celiac disease. And if a light bulb didn't go off then, I don't know what would have caused me to realize that she was at risk. And she was tested and, in fact, diagnosed with celiac disease.
And then we're going to go on and talk about how you deal with it, but if you then address that problem, would that mitigate a lot of her other symptoms?
Well, when the intestine heals, then you do absorb better, so the medication could be better regulated.
I see.
Osteoporosis can be treated. You can't necessarily make it go away,
yeah,
but it can be treated, so a person is less likely to have a serious break in a bone.
Now, it seems like the numbers are rising. I said that in the beginning. Why do you think that is?
For a couple of reasons. One is that we have the better tests. We have the easier tests. A lot of research has been done, so they know more about it. And there have been some real proponents of looking for celiac disease. Dr. Alessio Fasano, who's in Baltimore, and Dr. Peter Green at Columbia, have been working hard to increase our awareness. But there may actually just be more people who are developing it.
Yeah, so it's not necessarily that we're finding more cases, but there actually may be more cases.
Exactly.
And there's no theory as to why that is.
I don't think that researchers have the answer to that yet. Mm-hmm. There is, of course, the possibility of environmental factors, things that we may be eating, even, you know, not even directly related to wheat or barley or rye, but...
But there is some, obviously there's some inherited predisposition, as there is to a lot of things, to this. So you can see this running in families, which can be a clue, as it was in the case of this woman.
Yes. Yeah.
So basically, with all of that, we know that you can diagnose it. Are there false positives too? I mean, do the blood tests ever come back negative and the person does have celiac?
Yes, that's possible. excuse me.
And then what do you do?
Well, the antibody levels can rise and fall. But the real diagnosis, the gold standard, is a biopsy.
Oh, they really have to take a piece of the tissue of the villi of the small intestine to determine if it really is showing
that's the gold standard. Mm-hmm. That may be changing. Mm-hmm. Some of the gastroenterologists in our area are diagnosing based on symptomology combined with high levels of antibodies,
which they find in the blood, so they can avoid the biopsy in some cases.
Yeah.
Okay. So what is the treatment of choice?
The treatment is a gluten-free diet, and that means basically nothing with wheat, barley, or rye.
That sounds like everything.
It is almost. Well, that's not true.
Yeah.
Fresh fruits, fresh vegetables, meats, most cheeses, milk. Those things are naturally gluten-free. The problem,
but it's found, go ahead.
The problem is in the processing of foods. And most of the foods in our grocery stores are processed.
And why is it in most processed foods? I mean, is it that the actual substance is there? Meaning, not the substance, that if it's a non-grain food, why would you have grain product in it?
Wheat in particular is used as an ingredient in a lot of things. It's used as a thickening agent. Sometimes it's used to prevent foods from sticking to the processing line. It can also, there's a lot of cross-contamination.
You mean in a plant? It's not necessarily carefully monitored or...
In a plant or in a grocery store, you know, bulk foods might have been stored. Maybe something with wheat on it was in the bulk container, and then something that's not supposed to have wheat in it is stored after that.
Mm-hmm. So when a person is newly diagnosed with celiac, what's recommended? What should they do?
Ideally, they should see a dietitian. There are a lot of good resources online, but you know, as with everything, you have to be careful about what you read. There are specialty stores in the area. Not to give any plugs, but Nature Time is a great one for gluten-free foods. They have a dietitian who works there who can assist you.
I've noticed actually a lot of the grocery stores now have larger and larger areas devoted to gluten-free products.
Yeah. As the number of people with celiac disease increases, and also there's a little bit of a trend factor here. A gluten-free diet has become a little trendy. Some people recommend it for weight control or weight loss. So there's a greater demand, and that promotes manufacture of more specialty foods, so more of the stores have them.
It's interesting because you would think in some cases there's a move toward natural, local, all of those kinds of things we've talked about in some other contexts on this show. And so in a sense that dovetails well with this idea of not eating things that are highly processed or refined.
That's right. The challenge is that it's difficult to replace bread products. Gluten is a protein that helps with the elasticity of breads. It helps prevent things from crumbling. So there, you know, it's difficult. It's been difficult for manufacturers or individuals to come up with recipes that are palatable.
I also noted that you can find gluten in things like medicines, in yes. vitamins, things like lip balm, makeup. So it's really endemic. I mean, it's everywhere. And you really have to be almost incredibly vigilant if you have this problem, it would seem, with everything you buy. And so I guess what I'm asking you is, how do people deal with daily life? How do you recommend someone deal with their daily life?
Well, I think at the beginning, the most important thing is just to avoid what you know has gluten. Avoid the biggies like the breads and pizzas and things like that. You can learn to read food labels. One great thing is that in 2006, a food labeling law went into effect where if anything has wheat in it, it has to say so on the label. So that is a big help to people.
Was that the U.S. FDA?
Yes, that mm-hmm. was the Food Allergen Labeling and Protection Act.
Right.
And so 8 of the major allergens have to be on foods, and wheat is one of them. So that clears things up a little bit. You can also call companies, or you can go online. Manufacturers are much more aware of this, and if they have tested their food, they can say that it's gluten-free so that you'll know.
So you really have to be your own advocate and a very strong kind of almost an investigator in your purchases and in your eating habits.
Right. Anything that can get into your mouth, get into your body, you should investigate. If you don't mind, I'll share with you that I have celiac disease. I was mm-hmm. diagnosed in 2006. And as a dietitian, I thought I could be pretty vigilant with this. I thought I'd be pretty good at it. And I went to a conference, and I wore lipstick, which I don't usually wear on a daily basis. And lo and behold, I hadn't even thought that my lipstick could be contaminated, you know, could have gluten in it, and it did, and I suffered consequences. So, you know, some people are concerned about cosmetics and shampoos. Well, if the possibility of the shampoo getting in your mouth, getting in your nose.
That's less likely, though.
Less likely.
But makeup.
It's mainly the food, mainly what you ingest.
Right. And so clearly you can reduce the symptoms and therefore the damage to the villi if you really do basically eliminate gluten from your diet. So it is truly treatable.
That's true. A gluten-free diet is the only treatment right now for celiac disease. They are doing research on other treatments, other preventive measures. But the positive way to think about that is that there's no medication, so you don't have to pay for that. You can find gluten-free foods, and if you're choosing an overall healthy diet.
And in a restaurant, I would think it would be very important to be very proactive and ask the questions of the waiter or if necessary, ask for the chef and be able to get facts before you partake of anything.
Yeah, I think the food industry or the food service industry, by and large, has become a lot more aware and are very willing to help you in any way they can. You do have to be a self-advocate, though. You know, it can be difficult for you to understand what might be in a recipe, so it's important to ask.
Well, Diana Stuber, registered dietitian and certified diabetes educator at the Joslin Diabetes Center, thanks so much for joining us today and shedding some light on this growing digestive disease and what we all need to know and what to do about it. We have to take a short break, but there's more ahead, so stay right there. I'm Linda Cohen, and this is HealthLink on Air, 570 WSYR.